Welcome to the Friends with Fantasy Benefits Football Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Prentice, joined today by Colin Weatherwax. How are you doing today, Colin?
Doing great, Ben. How are you?
I'm good. It would be nice to get to talk some football. This is my first football podcast of the year, so I'm looking forward to getting to talk about the AFC South. I think that there's some good fantasy players in here, mostly defensive. But I think that there's a lot of fantasy appeal that can come from these four teams. What do you think?
I think it's a really bad division, especially whenever one of the team's second best player is their defense. There's a lot of uncertainty with the Colts and Andrew Luck and the Texans and Deshaun Watson. But like you said, there's a few, you know, playmakers that will be going in the first round in most of the drafts with Leonard Fournette and DeAndre Hopkins. So, and a few questionable, playing time issues in Tennessee. So it's definitely an interesting division. But like most other divisions, a lot of the teams depend on health more than the most.
Yes. I mean, that's the thing. There's so many good potential fantasy players in this division, and health is a major concern. Obviously, there's a lot of health concerns in football in general, but I mean, when you have players that could be real top tier quarterbacks, and Andrew Luck and Deshaun Watson, and those guys are both tied to injuries, and you have DeAndre Hopkins and T.Y. Hilton, who are then arguably tied to their quarterback's health as a result. And, you know, there's other players like a Will Fuller that could also be tied to someone like Deshaun Watson. You have an offense in the Jaguars who's not really expected to do a whole lot because their defense is their best offensive scoring play outside of Fournette, basically. And then you got the Titans who this year could actually be a better offensive team. They could be a worse offensive team. You don't really know what you're going to get with them, but they have made some changes this offseason that may propel certain players to do better or propel the defense to do better. So why don't we dive right in, Colin? Why don't you give our listeners your Twitter handle before we get started?
You can find me at CWeatherwax13.
And I can be found at BBrennisFWB. Colin, when are you going to add FWB into your Twitter handle, do you think?
Once I get a partial share in the company.
So never. Good to know.
Yeah.
Okay. Why don't we jump right in? Let's start talking a little bit about the quarterback position that we have. So outside, out of these four quarterbacks that we have, Deshaun Watson, Andrew Luck, Blake Bortles, and Marcus Mariota, who would you say that if you were able to guarantee that they were all going to play all 16 games, who would you say has the highest upside out of these four quarterbacks?
I think the highest upside has to be Deshaun Watson based on what we saw last year. I know it was a little, you know, crazy what we saw, you know, multiple four or five touchdown games against some top tier defenses. So maybe now defenses have, you know, more film on him and can disguise their coverages a little bit better. But a healthy Deshaun Watson with DeAndre Hopkins, who has shown to be, you know, a top one or two receiver in this league, I think he has the highest ceiling. But with the ACL injury and with his recovery, I'm not sure if I'm ready to take him as the number one or number two overall quarterback off the board, which I've seen sometimes in this offseason.
Yeah, I'm definitely not going to take him that high because I just don't know what's going to happen. Obviously, you have these sports teams who put a lot of money into getting the best doctors and the best health regimens for their players. And a lot of them, you know, you wouldn't be shocked if he came back and he played extremely well. I think that both he and Andrew Luck are players that can be absolutely fantastic for you this upcoming fantasy season. But obviously, there's so much health questions tied to them. I think that Deshaun Watson, if he was able to guarantee that he was able to play 16 games and what he showed last year wasn't a mirage, that he could easily be a top five quarterback in this league without really any effort because of his ability to run, because he has a player like DeAndre Hopkins, and also for the fact that he still has other players in Will Fuller, and he also has a Lamar Miller as a good running back. Now, they have made some defensive upgrades. They're going to get players back like in J.J. Watt and Whitney Mercilus. They brought in the Honey Badger. They drafted Justin Reed. So they've made improvements to their defense, which could help them force some turnovers. And I think it could give Deshaun Watson more opportunities to actually highlight his skills and to propel this offense into a very high-scoring machine. It just is all very much tied to his health.
Yeah, and I think one of the lightning rods for this division also is Andrew Luck. And there's going to be a lot of fantasy owners that are drafting this year that will stay away. They'll be on he'll be on their do not draft list because he burned them last year just because he didn't play at all. And there was always the expectation that he would only miss a few games. So if by training camp or by the preseason he's actually throwing the football and he's actually looking good on the field, that might skyrocket his draft stock right now. But I did say that Deshaun Watson probably has the highest ceiling, but if Andrew Luck, you know, shows any sign of making the field come week one or week two, I mean, he has to be right there with Deshaun Watson as probably the top quarterback in this division.
Would you say that Andrew Luck probably has a higher floor if he's able to prove that he's healthy, given what he's had in his past and given in the terms of a track record?
If you can guarantee me the health, then yes, he probably has the highest floor out of all these four quarterbacks in this division.
Okay. Is there any fantasy value in a two-quarterback league for someone like a Marcus Mariota or Blake Bortles? Obviously, Blake Bortles isn't a very good real-life quarterback. He excels in certain games, which is great. It helps get him paid, especially when he looks good in the playoffs. But we all know that it's not him who you're really banking on getting you that championship at the end of the year. And you're likely not expecting someone like Marcus Mariota to do so. They're probably both the low-end quarterback, too, Sue. Is that correct?
Yeah, definitely. And I think this might be Marcus Mariota's last chance to, you know, break out, per se, as a fantasy quarterback. I mean, we thought it was going to be last year. We thought it was going to be, you know, after his rookie season before he had the ankle injury. So this might be his last chance to show, look, maybe I put it all together and I'm a top 12 fantasy quarterback. But as far as Blake Bortles, he's not someone that I'm targeting, even in a two-quarterback league. He's just so up and down, and that offense relies on Leonard Fournette. And then if they have to, they'll either have Fournette throw it or Blake Bortles maybe run it. So I'm not looking at this division for my quarterback two, if possible.
And if someone like an Andrew Luck or Deshaun Watson aren't healthy, or a backup in Jacoby Brissett or possibly a Brandon Whedon / Joe Webb, are either or any of those three players, do any of them hold any potential fantasy value in a deep two quarterback league for you as a potential flyer or no?
Yeah, I think Brissett, just because of what we saw last year. I mean, he's competent at the position, and that's more than, you know, some quarterbacks in the league. So, and he can get T.Y. Hilton the ball, and they have a few weapons on that offense. So he might be someone, if I'm in a deep league, deep two-quarterback league or a draft-and-hold league, I might be targeting, you know, Jacoby Brissett just in case Andrew Luck doesn't make it through the whole season or can't even play this season.
All right, why don't we move over to the running backs. And who would you say, outside of Leonard Fournette, is the player that you're looking to grab out of these other running backs? Is it going to be someone like a Deion Lewis or Derrick Henry? Is it going to be a Lamar Miller? Or is it going to be someone who's actually playing for the Colts? Because I feel that everyone who plays for the Colts doesn't actually do anything in terms of running the football ever since Edgerrin James left. So.
Okay, so surprisingly enough, I'm actually going to take Marlon Mack over Lamar Miller or either of the Titans running backs. And the reason being is because he is probably the best running back on his team. You know, Robert Turbin just got suspended, whatever that means. But there's really no one besides a rookie third rounder that they picked this year to compete with him. And in Houston, Lamar Miller has shown that he's very boring at the position. If it was Deontay Foreman's team and if he wouldn't have gotten injured, then I'd be more intrigued by him. But I'm a little worried about him coming back from the Achilles injury that he sustained last year. And then in Tennessee, I'm very worried about the workload for Derrick Henry and Deion Lewis. I'm worried about the split. I don't know what Tennessee is going to do with them. I mean, if it's another DeMarco Murray situation and we kind of have to pick one, I'm going to spend that draft pick a couple, you know, three or four rounds later on Marlon Mack and, you know, get someone that's going to be a surefire either wide receiver or a flex or a quarterback in the fifth round instead of taking Derrick Henry or Deion Lewis.
Yeah, that time split is really going to be tough to see what's going to happen. Obviously, we have a new coach down there, so we could see a different style. We could easily see Derrick Henry either become a full-time back and Lewis become more of a pass catcher, or we could easily see Deion Lewis just, you know, be the main person who goes because of his ability to catch the ball, to be a workhorse. We don't really know what Mike Vrabel is going to do. For all we know, Mike Vrabel doesn't even like Derrick Henry that much. So we'll have to see, but that's obviously a situation that you want to keep an eye on. I'm still a Lamar Miller guy. Obviously, last year he didn't have a great year. He was basically a running back too, which isn't a terrible thing, but you would have drafted much higher and you would have expected a lot more. I think for this upcoming year, there's a good chance that if he's able to perform while Deshaun Watson's there, then that's going to be super beneficial, and you're going to probably see some better scores out of him if Deshaun Watson's able to stay healthy, because there's going to be more opportunities created, A, with that defense, and B, just because of Deshaun's ability to run and to pass better than anyone else on that roster. And I think that he could still be someone who could be a low-end running back one to a high-end running back two when it's all said and done. But I do agree, Marlon Mack is someone who you're going to want to try to grab late, because he has the potential to become a high-end running back two, especially if Andrew Luck is able to come back. We've seen what Frank Gore has done over the past couple of years, and I think that Marlon Mack can be very similar to that.
Yeah, I'm just worried about Lamar Miller just being Lamar Miller. I mean, he'll have a couple good games. He'll get the carry at the one-yard line. I mean, last year he only scored three times. So it's not like he's a high-end RB2 or a low-end RB1 unless Deshaun Watson, like you said, plays the whole season and they move up and down the field like they did in the few games that he showed last year. But if Deontay Foreman comes back and he's healthy, and he, you know, he shows in training camp or in the preseason that he's going to be on the field for the whole season, then I think he might be the best running back in Houston for sure.
I mean, what we'd like to see is we'd like to see him get back to the yards per carry that he had when he was in Miami, of having a, you know, out of 3 to 4 seasons, he had over 4.5, which is decent. You know, obviously you want to see higher than that, but he had a 4.9 and a 5.1. He did have 1 year where he had 4.0, but the last 2 years he's had a 4.0 and a 3.7. So you need to see better run blocking. You want to see what improvements they've made to the offensive line. And you'd like to see him score some touchdowns. I mean, the previous 3 years before this, he had 8, 8, and 5. So to only see 3 is obviously not what you want. Touchdowns are a very fluky thing. So I think if you can get maybe a combined 10 touchdowns out of Lamar Miller, obviously that's an improvement from where he had only 6 last year. But I think that's something that you can reasonably expect from someone who gets to touch the ball as often as Lamar Miller does.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised if Marlon Mack, you know, finishes below Lamar Miller, Deion Lewis, and Derrick Henry. But right now, I just want the guy that has the opportunity and doesn't have as much competition around him. And that's why I'm leaning towards Marlon Mack at his draft price right now.
What about someone like a Leonard Fournette? How early do you think you have to go to take someone like him, as he is such a major focal point for a team like that, given the fact that he touches the ball on probably 75 to 85% of his team's offensive drives, it feels like?
I think that's not
an actual number, obviously, because
right,
that would be an insane amount. But based on how that team plays, it feels like he touches it so often.
Yeah, definitely. And I think if, you know, I think it would be a mistake for him to make it out of the first round. And if he does, then I'm pouncing on him in the second round for sure. Just a guy that dominates the ball, that dominates the offense as much as him, you're not going to get that, you know, outside of the first round very often. And if you can, then he's someone that you definitely need to target. But, you know, like you said, he's going to take up most of that offense, and, you know, they might even have him throw it occasionally just because Blake Bortles is so bad at throwing the ball. But, you know, they run that offense through him, and if he can be a top 10 running back again, as long as he stays healthy, then he's definitely worth that first round pick.
Now, last year he was ranked 9th of running backs in the PPR standard. Now, he did miss 3 games, so those zeros will bring down his stats. If he was able to go for a full season, would you expect him to be a top 3 running back?
Top 3 is a little pushing it, just because of what we saw from Gurley and Bell and Ezekiel Elliott if he's on the field the whole time. Top 5 would probably be more realistic. Just to give some room with, you know, Kareem Hunt or Alvin Kamara or someone like that. So top 5 is probably his ceiling. I don't see him being a top 3 running back, barring injury from the top 3 guys that are being drafted this year.
Do you think that in a PPR format, he's going to be someone who is considered a reasonable play? Because he only had 48 targets last year, which isn't terrible in running back standards, but do you think that he's going to be someone who's probably even targeted more this year and when it's all said and done than those 48 times?
Yeah, he might. I actually think that he's format proof, just because of, you know, how much the offense runs through him and how much he can get on the ground. And if you know, if the defense sets them up with you know, good field position and they end up at the 1 yard line, he's always going to get the ball. So, you know, his touchdowns can definitely improve. And, you know, if he improves his pass catching ability and, you know, they want to get him more involved in the offense, then, you know, he'll definitely provide that in a PPR format.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking over at it right now, and it looks like he was roughly around 20th or so in terms of actual targets for running backs from last year. But, you know, you're likely not going to have – Shane Vereen was on this list. He doesn't even have a team right now. I mean, obviously, with Carlos Hyde going to Cleveland, you could probably see a decrease from someone like him. Mark Ingram is suspended, so he's going to miss some time. So there's a way for him to be able to jump up this list. And last year as a rookie, he obviously got a ton of playing time and a ton of production. And I think that we could see even more as what you saw in the playoffs. You saw that they were trying to give him the ball more and rely and slow things down. I'm sure that that is what the offensive game plan will be going in week in and week out, and letting Blake Bortles take care of certain mistakes that the defense makes. And basically he's going to likely get around the same amount of carries as what he had last year in 268. Wouldn't be surprised if he saw like 240 to 275. You'd like to see an improvement from 1,000 yards, and I wouldn't be surprised if he maybe got an additional 20 targets with an additional maybe 10 to 15 catches. So I think that you could see a big jump in what his stats are this year.
Yeah, and he was a top 9 running back last year, and he missed 3 games. So just, you know, give him his average points per game out those 3 games, and he's probably close to that top 5 threshold. So if he stays healthy and they incorporate him even more in that offense, then, like I said, he's definitely worthy of a first-round pick in either format. And if he's there in the second, then you got to jump on him.
Yeah, I mean, last year, if you basically stated that in the PPR league, he basically got roughly 15 points a week. So you gave him an additional 45 points. You're looking at him being basically a running back 6 or so from last year. So he does jump a couple of spaces. You know, you saying that he could be a top 5 guy is completely in the realm of possibility. Why don't we move over to the wide receivers for this division? Outside of DeAndre Hopkins, is there anyone that you're really looking to target for this upcoming season?
I'm going to jump back on the Corey Davis bandwagon, and I was at the forefront of it last year, hoping that he would provide, you know, one of those rookie wide receiver years where he just completely bursts out of nowhere, especially being a small college guy. But I'm definitely going to, you know, take advantage of the post-hype sleeper and take him a little bit later than I was last year and hope that, you know, either Mariota figures it out or Davis stays healthy. Because there's not very many options out there in Tennessee as far as pass catching goes. So he's the one that I'm actually targeting later on in the drafts. I'm not completely staying away from T.Y. Hilton, although I'm a little bit nervous because he had multiple, I think three or four games last year where he scored over 20 points and the rest were below 10. So he's the quintessential, you know, big play threat. And that was with Jacoby Brissett. So if Andrew Luck shows that he's healthy, I think his draft stock will increase to probably the threshold where I won't draft him. But he is someone I'm definitely interested in.
Yeah, I mean, just to keep on the T.Y. Just to keep on the T.Y. Hilton side, he's turning into a player that's kind of like a Deshaun Watson. If he doesn't have a big game, he's not really giving you a significant amount of production. He's like a wide receiver 2 to a wide receiver 3 if he keeps playing with Brissett. I think if Andrew Luck is there, he's, you know, a high-end wide receiver 2 because I think he'll have more catches and obviously more yards to come with it. There's probably a chance that he's going to have about 8 or so touchdowns if he does play with Andrew Luck, but obviously he's someone whose health is going to be tied to someone like Andrew Luck. The player who I really like is going to be Will Fuller. I liked how Will Fuller looked when Deshaun Watson and he were both playing together and they were both healthy. The problem is his stats are going to end up being tied to someone like a Deshaun Watson regardless, because that entire offense, regardless of who it has, is always going to be tied to what Deshaun Watson is able to do and how healthy he is. So I think that if Deshaun Watson is able to be healthy, that Will Fuller is someone who could sneak in to being a high-end wide receiver 3, low-end wide receiver 2. And considering where you're probably getting him in draft, then I think that could be a pretty good value play. For someone like a DeAndre Hopkins, how early are you going to take him if you know that Deshaun Watson is likely to miss games at the beginning of the year?
He's got to be a top five pick. I mean, I will not take him over Antonio Brown. I can't get myself to do that. I probably wouldn't take him over the big three running backs, but if I'm picking five and he's right there, he's definitely going to be in the running. I mean, what he provided you last year was something that we've only seen from Antonio Brown most of the time. And that was with Deshaun Watson, where he completely tore it up. And then also with the backup quarterbacks that Houston has been playing with for the past, you know, 3 or 4 years. So if we can get a fully healthy Deshaun Watson and a full year of him and Hopkins together, he could definitely, you know, return back a top five draft pick value. I mean, last year he scored 282 points last year, which was, like I said, second behind Antonio Brown. And that was only with, what, 4 or 5 games with Deshaun Watson. So, you know, if he can have a full season, then he's definitely going to be worth that number 5 overall pick.
Yeah, obviously him playing with Brock Osweiler is something that every fantasy owner is happy to not see anymore. In a PPR league, his value is just even higher than what you would expect, and obviously that makes a ton of sense because last year he had 175 targets with 96 catches. Now, obviously, in a PPR, you're going to be extremely happy because in the first 3 weeks, he only had 7 catches a week, and he was basically averaging 15.5 to 16.5 points per game, which is decent, you know. From where you probably drafted him last year, he gave you back a ton of value. The problem is you're probably not going to be able to make a ton of value on the pick this year. It's kind of like drafting a Mike Trout in baseball. You know what he's going to give you, so there's not a ton of value in the pick, but you know that as long as he's able to produce, you're not losing value on the pick, which is something you can't do with a first-round pick. So I think DeAndre Hopkins in a PPR league is as solid as it can be, regardless of who the backup quarterback is. And I think that if we knew that Deshaun Watson was potentially missing time, he's still likely, at worst, an early second-round pick because of the production he's able to have without Deshaun Watson on the field.
Yeah, and he had 175 targets last year, and most of those came from backup quarterbacks. So give me 175 targets with mostly Deshaun Watson, and he could probably get 30 to 40 more catches because those backup quarterbacks in Houston are not the best.
I completely agree. Is there any wide receivers on Jacksonville that interests you at all? Is someone like a Marquise Lee, someone who had 96 catches last year and now without Allen Robinson at any point during this year, is he someone who may be more intriguing, or because it's Blake Bortles throwing you the ball, he's probably no better than a wide receiver three anyway?
Yeah, he's probably no better than a wide receiver three, like you said. You know, him and Moncrief are the primary wide receivers there. If I'm in a deeper league or if I'm in a draft and hold league, I'm taking a flyer on D.D. Westbrook or Keelan Cole, just because Marquise Lee has not been healthy, neither has Moncrief. And if Blake Bortles needs to throw it deep, then those are the two guys to throw it to. Marquise Lee kind of fell out of favor with the Jaguars last year, and they were kind of forced to play him. So I'm looking at the deeper receivers in Jacksonville. If I have to, I'm not going to pay up for a Moncrief or a Marquise Lee this year.
Do you see any value in someone like a Rishard Matthews or a Will Fuller?
Yeah, Rishard Matthews in a PPR league is definitely valuable. I probably won't take him over Corey Davis in a PPR league, but if he's still there towards the end of the draft, then he showed last year that, you know, he still has a little bit in the tank and he still has a little bit of explosion as well. And as far as Will Fuller, I'm a little bit nervous that he might just be a speed threat. And like you said before, he's basically just tied to Deshaun Watson, because as soon as Watson went down, so did Fuller. I mean, Fuller was basically non-existent the rest of the year. So if you can guarantee me health for Watson, then Fuller is probably the third best receiver in this division behind T.Y. Hilton and DeAndre Hopkins. But, you know, unless he falls in drafts, then I probably won't end up with him on many teams.
All right. Why don't we move over to the tight ends in this division before we get to the real juicy fun of going to the kickers. Delanie Walker, top five tight end for you?
How can he not be? I mean, he has been for the past, you know, 3 or 4 years. As soon as he got out of San Francisco, he's been Tennessee's main option at the wide receiver / tight end position, and he just continues to produce. I mean, there's no reason to really question him right now besides age and possibly injury factoring in. He's definitely going to be a top five tight end drafted this year.
Outside of that, is there any other tight ends in this division that interests you in any capacity?
In a PPR league, Jack Doyle. I'm not really too scared about Eric Ebron being there in Indianapolis now. But other than, you know, in Indianapolis, other than Jack Doyle, and that's strictly in a PPR setting, I'm not interested in Austin Seferian Jenkins. I think he's one of the most overhyped tight ends in the past, you know, 4 or 5 years. And there's not really anyone in Houston that's, you know, jumping off the page to me.
Yeah, that's the thing. I actually think that Eric Ebron actually hurts Jack Doyle's value. I'm sure you would agree that he doesn't help the value at all. Jack Doyle was benefited last year by playing with someone in Jacoby Brissett and being basically the number two pass catcher, or even being the number one option, just because Brissett's A, not that good, and because their offensive line was just so bad you had to do a lot of dump-offs. He didn't have a lot of yards. He had 80 catches and didn't even break 700 yards. So, obviously, he's someone that, with getting 107 targets, you would have liked, A, to have more than 4 touchdowns probably, and more than 690 yards, but that's what you're going to get when you're playing with Jacoby Brissett, who's not A, getting you a ton of yards, and B, only throwing dump offs because he's running for his life because that offensive line is horrible. I think Marlon Mack will be kind of like Frank Gore in terms of pass protection, so he'll be able to help there. And I think that if Andrew Luck's able to come back, he personally was a player that got Jack Doyle the ball 2 years ago, which is why they were okay with letting go of Pony Boy, who's down now in New Orleans. I can't even remember, or who was Fleener, Kobe Fleener. Couldn't remember his name because he's so bad. But I think that Eric Ebron here won't help, but it will basically be, you know, a two tight end set of what they had for the past couple of years. I think that Seferian Jenkins could be somewhat decent, only for the fact that we've seen the tight end at least get utilized over the last couple of years with Julius Thomas in Jacksonville. I don't think that there's a lot of reliable pass catchers that are down there. Obviously, outside of Leonard Fournette, I'm not really sure if there's any other viable pass catchers that would really stop Austin Seferian Jenkins from actually having a decent year. I'm not really worried about Marquise Lee or anyone else taking targets or playing time or anything like that away from someone. I just worry that Blake Bortles won't be able to throw enough to get a ton of value for an Austin Seferian Jenkins.
Yeah, I completely agree. And for me, it's basically Delanie Walker, and then, you know, towards the end of the draft in a PPR, it's Jack Doyle for me in this division.
All right. Why don't we move over to the kickers so that we can end on a nice note? Is there any kickers in this division that interest you in any way whatsoever?
Nope.
Very good insight, Colin. I really appreciate that. If you did have to pick one, is it Adam Vinatieri?
I mean, I guess. Actually, I would probably say Kai Fairbairn, the one in Houston, just because that offense has the possibility to be the best in the division. And anytime you get a kicker on a good offense, usually good things happen. He was decent last year. I know he got the job a little bit late, but just the fact that they might be good on offense, that's the only one that I would take a flyer on in this division, really.
Yeah, it would be nice to be able to see him get more than, you know, one field goal attempt from weeks 5 till week 12. He didn't have more than one attempt in any of those games. Now, to be fair, in week 8 he had 5 point after attempts, and in week 11 he had 4. So obviously he did give you some production by getting a lot of point afters. But you'd like to see what the offense is able to do. Obviously, once again, tied to Deshaun Watson, as we're going to keep hammering that point home this entire show. If he's able to be there, I could see him being someone who could be a top 12 kicker just because of the offense. You know, you saw Mason Crosby with how good that offense was for the Packers, and he's not a great kicker. But you saw the value he was able to bring by being someone who could kick long field goals, got a lot of point afters, and was able to at least get a good amount of scores because the offense was able to move the ball more efficiently than other offenses. So I think you could see that from Fairbairn as well. All right, Colin, why don't we wrap it up by talking about the defense. What are your thoughts on the Tennessee Titans defense coming into this year?
I mean, it has to be a little bit better, right? I mean, they're getting a defensive-minded coach to come in and take over that, and then they also signed a guy that sat on the bench the whole Super Bowl. So, I mean, how much worse could it get?
Well, I mean, you could be like, I don't know, a really, really, really bad defense. I'm trying to think of who the worst defense in the league was last year.
Actually, I don't want to say.
Why is that?
Because I looked it up today and I was very disappointed, so I burned the actual site. I burned it.
You burned it.
Yep.
It's gone forever.
Yeah, it's called a firewall. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Mm-hmm. So are we talking about the Raiders?
Yes, unfortunately.
Okay. It sounds like you have an emotional attachment to the team.
Semi.
Okay. Well, they're poop. So, I mean, to be fair, the Giants and the Jets were both right there. So, I don't know if I can really say much, but at least I was slightly better. But anyway, I do think Tennessee has a decent chance to be an improved defense coming into this year. Obviously, they had, you know, 43 sacks last year is a decent number. They really have to improve on the how many points are given up on a game by game basis. Obviously, you know, weeks 5 through 7, they went against Miami, Indianapolis, and Cleveland, and they only gave up roughly about 12 points per game. But then the game before, they had given up 51 to Houston. They had given up, you know, 40 to Pittsburgh. So they're going to have to really try to get down to roughly 20 to 22 points per game on average for them to actually be somewhat usable. I know that they finished 16th last year, and that's because they did generate a high sack total and 21 turnovers and one touchdown. But you'd like to see some improvements with the defensive players that they have brought in throughout this offseason.
Yeah, and I'm actually surprised you started off with them as the defense to start off with, because my big question is, how early are you taking the Colts defense this year?
Man, that's tough. Is the first round too early?
I mean, are you going to take David Johnson coming off an injury or the Colts defense?
The Colts defense.
Yeah, I mean, I'm right there with you. But in all seriousness, Jacksonville is very polarizing just based off of what they did last year. They scored 8 touchdowns as a defense, and they are steadily going, you know, before round 10, which is something in my drafting, you know, years, I've never taken a defense past, you know, before the end of the draft. That's what I always do every year because I just stream. That's seems to be the best strategy. What do you think about the Jacksonville defense this year?
I think it's going to be a fantastic defense. Obviously, we've seen some top-tier defenses come in, and you know they may be drafted as number one, and they may finish as a number five. But you know what you're going to get with them. You know you're going to get a lot of sacks. You know that they're going to generate turnovers because of the pass rush that they have, and they have a pretty stout run defense. What you need to have happen with the Jacksonville defense is you need them to come close to being able to replicate the amount of turnovers that they had last year. Now, they had 33 total turnovers last year, and that resulted in 8 touchdowns. Pretty sure both of those numbers are probably not going to be met this year. I could see them being around 25 total turnovers, and touchdowns are fluky. They could easily go this year and have only one touchdown. That would be a big difference for a team. But you know that they're still going to have around 45 to 60 sacks somewhere in there. You know that they're not going to give up a ton of points. And because of how they run their offense and they kind of drain the clock, they do a lot of running, there's a good chance that they're able to keep resting up while the offense is out there. And as a result, there's not going to be a ton of defensive possessions that they're really going to have to play per game, which is going to allow those points per game to stay down.
So are you looking to take them before round 10, or are you just going to stream like I will?
It's tough for me to say I'm going to take a defense because it all depends on how the draft is going. There's many times in which I'm going to enter a draft, I'm going to be like, I am not going to reach on the defense, regardless of how good that defense is. Because, A, you know that after the draft, there's typically always 1 to 2 defenses that are left on the wire that are surprising early on, that get picked up and they actually play pretty well throughout the year. Or there's a team that could have had a bad season last year, like the Texans, and it could be a vastly improved team with all the defensive additions that they've had and people coming back from injuries. So it's tough to say that I'm going to go and reach on a player or a team. I'm very less likely to reach on the defense and kind of wait until the later rounds. Now, if I feel I've secured the best talent and there's a lot of flex players that are left, but the likelihood that I get to actually benefit from them in my lineup is pretty slim, I feel then that may be a time to go for a defense, depending on who is available. So if it's between, say, the Jaguars and going for someone like someone like a Corey Davis, to me, who I'm not overly sold on, then I may go for the defense. If Corey Davis is the best option, I'm sure that you would not agree with that because you think higher of Corey Davis, but just trying to stay in the division. So,
right, and yeah, I don't see myself taking Jacksonville. Like you said, it all depends on how the draft's going, but I like to have a deep team. I know that injuries happen, especially more so in the NFL than any other sport. So having, you know, a pretty good wide receiver four who most likely will ride the bench is something that appeals to me because I know that, you know, either my 1, 2, or 3 wide receiver or even my flex is most likely going to get injured throughout the year. And having someone that I can just plug and play is more valuable than a defense in that round, especially based off the regression, which we expect, you know, going from 8 touchdowns to, like you said, 1, I would say probably 1 to 3 would be fair. Seeing another 8 touchdown or performance from a defense is very unlikely. Not saying that it won't happen, but it's something that you can't bank on. So I think in this division, if you were going to rank the defenses that I'd be drafting, it would be Jaguars, Texans, Titans, and then I would leave a open spot before I take the Colts defense.
I agree with that. Speaking of the Texans, what can we expect from the Texans this year? Are you in the same boat as I that this could be a top 8 defense with everyone actually performing and them being healthy? I feel like there's so much of this team that is dependent on health, but this defense has shown time and time again that they are a top-tier team. They have J.J. Watt, who is an absolutely outstanding defender. They go and add 2 good safeties. I think there's a very good opportunity for them to improve from where they were last year.
Well, they very well could be a top 8 defense this year, and they're definitely going to improve so long that J.J. Watt is healthy and they actually get some good play out of their, you know, middle linebackers. You know, they had Cushing, and then, of course, he did steroids again, so they no longer have Cushing. They don't want to mess around with him, but they have Merciless, they have Watt, they have Clowney, and those 3 guys are you know, otherworldly. So having them is a great start. So I do think that they can improve. I'm looking to get them in the last round if I can. I probably won't reach for them, but I do think that they can improve based off of what they did last year for sure.
Yes, it would be great to see J.J. Watt actually be healthy for an entire year because he's just great for the league. And I really like the Texans defense in general. And they're someone who I'm probably going to be trying to target at the end of a draft based on what I think their potential could be. And I would presume that they're probably not getting drafted super early. So as a result, you're probably not having to use that early of a pick, you know, at the back end of a draft, that if they are a pretty bad team for whatever reason, you haven't spent a lot of draft capital on them. So, all right, Colin, why don't you tell our listeners where you can be reached and what you're working on?
You can find me at CWeatherWax13. I have a podcast coming out with Mike Alexander of FWFB and Mike Clay of ESPN. We dive into some wide receivers and get some of Mike Clay's opinions on Noir Beach strategy and a little bit of trash talk between Philadelphia Eagles and Oakland Raiders. So you can check that out. I can also be reached on a few fantasy baseball podcasts as that season's hitting the midway point, and then I'll also be updating my rankings for fantasy football coming up for this new season.
And I can be reached at BBrandsFWFB. You can find Colin and myself on 2 separate baseball podcasts. You can find us on the Push Accept podcast where we talk about trades for different types of leagues. You can also find us on the Wednesday show, joined by Ray Kuhn and Evan Peterson. You can find me throughout the basketball offseason with a couple of different people. Eric Mackey will be one of the returning hosts, and you'll be able to find some of my football rankings this summer as well. Also, remember to go to podcastawards.com and nominate us for the People's Choice and for the sports category. We look forward to your votes, and from the rest of us at Friends with Fantasy Benefits, have a great football offseason, everyone.